The Electric Company's public information program brings you your Better Living Radio Theater in its salute to the American home, its family, and its way of life in this bright American future. The tubes in your radio, the power behind this station which brings you this program, the nightlight at your child's bedside, the giant motors that drive the machines to mold our steel and power your production lines, the current that pops your family toaster, foods, aircraft, railroads, automobiles, and ships. Electricity always at hand, day or night, with its economy for lower cost to you, with rising efficiency through its own research, with its growth to match the nation's needs at all times. Electricity is at work to bring you better living. This is your narrator, Wendell Niles. Now your Better Living Radio Theater brings you Wings Over the World, the dynamic story of America's sudden plunge into mass production of airplanes for World War II. A call to the men of our aviation industry faced with no experience, with only a fine set of dreams and courage. This is the seventh in a series of broadcasts at this time to show you how Americans in a free nation have worked to bring you better living today. In fact, the highest standard of living in the world. Later, we will hear from today's guest, Mr. Donald W. Douglas, president of the Douglas Aircraft Corporation. And now the story, Wings Over the World. Washington, D.C., June 1938. At a special meeting of the nation's airplane manufacturers today, General H.H. Arnold said, "I cannot offer you money, I cannot offer you contracts, but I am asking you to prepare for an unprecedented war. A war for which our possible enemies have been preparing for years. A war in which they have left nothing undone to build the best planes they can in great numbers." November 1938, following General Arnold's request for planes, the president asked for 5,500 planes for defense. The answer was money for 59. How by 1943 did the United States aircraft industry find itself able to build 48,000 craft in a single year? To begin this dramatic story of American industry, let's go back to 1910 when one of our pioneers of aviation was a young midshipman at the United States Naval Academy. He's facing his commanding officer.
Of all the men standing around, you had to let your confounded model airplane sail into an admiral.
I didn't choose him deliberately, sir.
This is not a humorous matter.
I beg your pardon, sir.
An admiral.
I hope, sir, you'll accept my resignation from the Naval Academy.
What's that? Your resignation?
It would be easier for you, sir, than having to dismiss me.
What's that? Yes, I believe you're right. I've done my best to encourage you in your interest in aviation. But flying a model plane into an admiral in the civilian world, sir. Pick your targets with better judgment.
It was the great developments of the 19th century which had given man his wings, the development of the gasoline engine to power the heavier-than-air craft which the Wrights and others had used. It was also the development of electricity and the electric motor, which were to be the future brains of the big planes, and which also were to power the marvelous machine tools making mass production possible. But even in the years after 1910, when the automobile industry was turning to the electric motor and electrical power for its fabulous mass production methods, the airplane remained, in popular thinking, an expensive toy for the other fellow to fool around with. Even after the First World War, in which Americans had to fly foreign-built machines because we had no aviation industry, the enthusiasm of 200,000 of our finest young men trained as flyers could not rouse the nation to an interest in civilian flying. By now, in the early 20s, Tom had moved to Los Angeles.
Come in.
Hello there. You know where the barbers are? They're not out here in the shop.
Oh, one of them's sick today. The other went down the street for some coffee. You ought to be back in 5-10 minutes.
Thanks.
What's the trouble? No magazines out there to read?
I'm a writer. I hate reading.
Oh? What kind of writer?
Sports. My name's Williams.
Bill Williams?
Right.
Oh, I've read your stories. They're about the only thing I do read when I'm not drafting.
What are those plans on your board?
An airplane. I've got $120,000 and the start of a whole new industry for Los Angeles lying here on these tables, and I can't even get off the runway.
And that's a lot of money. What are you?
Flyer, designer, graduate of MIT, ex-vice president, and
Vegetable grower.
Vegetable grower.
I came out here to California because roofing's cheaper out here. I planted vegetables so my family won't starve. Sounds like your barber's back.
Yeah, sounds like it. Well, it's been interesting talking to you. Good luck.
Thanks. Come in again if I'm still around.
I'll do that.
Hey, back again?
What did you say about a new industry for Los Angeles?
Oh, I said I had it here on this table. I have a $120,000 order from the Navy to build 3 torpedo planes. If I could get the money, I could build them. Plenty more.
Ever built any?
Well, I was the Army's chief designer for a while during the war. I was vice president of a large company now making planes. I wanted to go on my own.
How much money you got?
Not a dime. Remember the vegetables?
Well, have you tried the banks? An order from the Navy.
I've tried every bank in the city. The war is over. Who's interested in backing torpedo planes?
What's the least, the very least you could start with?
$15,000.
I don't think I could get you that much, but I can get some of it.
How much?
Now, don't rush me. I don't know how much. But my publisher is the biggest booster Los Angeles has. If it means a new industry for this city, he might help you out. I'll tell you what I'll do. Let me get a haircut so as I can face him, and I'll take you down and introduce you.
You'll find it a matter of record. This is how one of America's great aviation companies started, in the back of a barber shop. Another began because a wealthy sportsman cracked up his plane, became angry, and decided he could build a better one. A third was founded by a man who, as a youngster, had been fired by an article in the American Boy magazine. But even when, in 1926, this same boy, now a man, sold one of his planes to a young male pilot named Lindbergh, who flew it to fame and caught the popular imagination, the orders for planes still fell short of a point where they could go into mass production, the staff of life to any successful business. In some plants, Tom's for example, things like this happened in the middle 1930s as Nazi Germany and Japan prepared for conquest. With a few days of shore leave, Tom's old friend of Naval Academy days, Dave Belknap, has come for a visit to Tom's West Coast plane factory.
Well, Dave, what do you think of her?
Your newest model, huh?
Just started turning them out.
It's quite a wingspread.
2 feet 8 inches, tip to tip. Take a look at that landing gear.
Hey, what type do you call it?
Rocker type, adapted from an old model.
Single passenger, of course.
Yeah. One of our test men tried it with 2 children on his lap.
Could he do it and keep his license?
The inspectors made him do it. Declared it one of the safest rocking chairs they'd ever seen. Got an order for 5,000.
I don't know how you stick it, Tom. All these years of work and worry for rocking chairs.
Well, it's not so bad, Dave. Another of the boys hasn't had one single order for 4 months, but he's keeping his entire force on the payroll, tending the lawns and gardens. You'll see, they'll want us someday.
I cannot offer you money, I cannot offer you contracts, but I'm asking you to prepare for an unprecedented war. A war for which our possible enemies have been preparing for years. A war in which they have left nothing undone to build the best planes they can in great numbers. Yes, that was General Arnold's call to the leaders of our aviation industry in 1938. As you know, the answer was appropriations for 59 planes. But soon the orders from the free nations at war, France and England, revved up our production of planes. We thought we were doing well until Pearl Harbor. The shocking news that in the vast Pacific, we had 176 planes. Now the services needed planes, planes, and more planes. All eyes were on our aviation industry. Again, Tom's friend Dave, now a high-ranking officer in the Navy, was at his side.
Can't Detroit help you, Tom? They've been doing mass production on autos for 30 years.
Detroit's bursting with war orders already. They're short of engineers and workers.
I know.
Nobody's ever had to produce the tremendous quantities of planes we have to. Planes aren't autos. They're far more complicated.
Got to think of a way out. We're fighting a war on 2 fronts.
It's going to be a battle of manpower and machine tools, and some of my best men are in service now. We'll need women. Thousands of them, or we're sunk, Dave. I've already got the call out.
What about the children? Who's going to stay with the children?
We're going to set up day nurseries.
Well, that may work. You can't rivet bombers in the kitchen at home.
Unless it's one of those homey kitchens you see in the movies, but...
But what?
Hey, there is work women can do at home.
Dave, suppose they can't get out of the house. The child's too young or the woman's crippled, something like that. You know what they can do? They can sort.
Sort? Sort what?
Nuts and bolts. I've got men doing that job now, women too. Suppose women at home did this sorting job. We bring them a batch of nuts and bolts, they sort them, we pick them up. There are a lot of other things, little jobs, but necessary jobs people can do at home.
You think it'd work?
It has to. I'm going to talk to the boys about this. It's things like this that may save us.
Do you know, actually, how the United States built 48,000 planes in the first year of the war? On ideas like that. With women and handicapped people working at home, with day nurseries, with 1,001 new ways of attacking mass production. But sheer manpower and womanpower weren't enough to build those planes for the free nations. So they turned to man's silent partner, the electric motor. For years, the electric power industry had quietly built its power plants, had extended its lines in intricate networks around cities, into suburban communities, out to the farms. Now with the power on hand, machine tools, the heart of mass production, could be designed to do many jobs at once. Be designed to turn the unskilled and semi-skilled into the equals of trained, experienced workers.
Look, Dave, that's a porcupine. It punches 360 holes in a bomber catwalk in one operation. We used to use a single drill 360 times for the same job. And this, our new electric riveter, counterbalanced so a woman can run it for hours.
You walked away from those great plane factories knowing that our manpower, strained to its limits, had found a million extra helpers in the electric motors of the new machines and machine tools designed to meet emergencies as they rose, sometimes overnight.
Those were great years, Dave.
Holy smoke, Tom, you don't want them back.
No, of course not. We'll build for defense, but what we're proud of is that this time people have continued to fly. It's not like the early 1920s. Our planes take people on vacations to Rio and Paris, to Hawaii and Florida. Our businessmen fly to India and Peoria, to Boston and Mexico City. Christmas time and summertime find mother and dad and the kids flying to be with the older folks back home. I wish the world were all at peace, Dave. I'd like to take some time off and go on a vacation, too. To
the moon? Saturn?
Who knows? But I'm keeping a bag packed.
Now, Better Living Radio Theater brings you our special guest for today, Mr. Donald W. Douglas, president of the Douglas Aircraft Corporation. Mr. Douglas.
Our rolling plains, green forests, winding rivers, and rich mines have provided the people of this nation a truly rich material heritage. But it took faith, will, and ingenuity to develop these magnificent assets into the fabulous America of today. Abundant electric power and light for the home, farm, and industry have been an effective instrument in converting these great natural resources into that better living for more people, which has been the goal of American free enterprise from the beginning.
Thank you, Mr. Douglas. You have been listening to Mr. Donald W. Douglas, president of the Douglas Aircraft Corporation. Mr. Douglas was today's guest of the Better Living Radio Theater, which has brought you Wings Over the World, the seventh in a series of broadcasts at this time, presented by this station and the Electric Company's Public Information Program. Now, this is your narrator, Wendell Niles, inviting you to be with us again next week at the same time when your Better Living Radio Theater will present another in this series of programs. Until then, wishing you better living.